We're doing our class on the Jewish home. Good evening, everyone. And this semester, we're learning the concepts of the Jewish home aligned with the Mishnayot in Pirkei Avot. So we're going to begin with the Mishnah we left off with last year, the 20th Mishnah in the 5th chapter of Pirkei Avot. Yehuda ben Tema Omer. Yehuda, the son of Tema, would say the following. Heve az kanamer. Be brazen like a leopard. Vekal kanesher. And swift as an eagle. Ratz katzvi. Run like a deer. Vegibor ka'ari. And be as mighty as a lion. Lasot ritzon avicha shebashamayim. To do the will of your father in heaven. So that's the first Mishnah. And in some Mishnayot, this is divided into two Mishnayot. In other Mishnayot, the next sentence is part of the same Mishnah. Hu haya omer, Yehuda ben Tema would also say, he would say another line. Az panim legeinom. Someone who's brazen-faced will end up in perdition. Wait a second, but he told us to be brazen. What did he begin the Mishnah with? He said, be brazen like a leopard. Heve az kanamer. And now he's telling us, one who is brazen-faced will go to perdition. Uvoshet panim leganeden. If a person has shame, so that person will make it to the Garden of Eden. And then, yiratzon mitfanecha Hashem lokenu shetivnei rechav b'mechav yaminu v'ten chelkenu b'toratecha meipi your will, Hashem, our God, you should rebuild your city swiftly in our days. Give our portion in your Torah. So, what are we talking about here? The simple understanding, which has many applications in life, is that Yehuda ben Tema is telling us that for different times, we can use different traits. And every trait can be used, if directed correctly, it can be used in the service of Hashem. You'd say being brazen is a bad thing. He himself says being brazen is a bad thing. Yeah, but that could also be used in the right context. The example that's given is actually given in the commentaries on the Tur. We have a halachic system. We all know the Codex, the Shulchan Aruch, written by Rav Yosef Karo. Well, the Codex is fashioned after the Tur. Rabbi Yaakov, the son of the Rosh was rabbi in Ashkenaz in Germany, in Rutenberg, and then later on in Sfard in Spain. He lived a little bit after Nachmanides, after the Ramban. And so the Rosh had a son named Rabbi Yaakov, who compiled a work called the Tur. And in that halachic work, he divided it into four sections, fashioned after the four rows of the Kohen's breastplate. It says, Arba'at Turim Aven. The Kohen's breastplate had four rows of stone. So too, the Tur wrote his work, divided into four subjects. One is the day-to-day living, one is monetary matters, one is marital issues, and the other one is issues that you'd ordinarily go to a rabbi for, issues that can involve the kosher meat and non-kosher meat, can involve laws, all the dietary laws, and the laws of tithing, and the laws of charity, etc. So the Shulchan Aruch fashions after the Tur. The Shulchan Aruch came along, wrote a commentary on the Tur, and then wrote his own work that really goes chapter after chapter after the Tur. In the first comment of the Tur begins his halachos with this. Yehuda ben Tema says, this rule, as though this is the formula how you start life. You want to know how to start off, you got to know to channel tendencies. We all have tendencies. People have tendencies to be brazen. People have tendencies to be swift. People have tendency to rush. People have tendency to be brave. Those are all wonderful tendencies. Those are all dangerous tendencies. Depends on where you channel it. And so the Tur begins with this quote. The Shulchan Aruch omits this quote, because the Shulchan Aruch says it is most common that the trait of brazenness is misapplied. There will be instances where you have to be brazen. But if you're going to start using that trait, then most often people will misapply it. So let's take a few examples, let's take a few stories, and let's see how we apply it in the home. When we get married, so we're in for surprises. That's the way it works. You think you know who you're marrying, and then the morning after the wedding, suddenly you start discovering that there's more to the person than you thought, than you knew. And suddenly we see in one another, the wife sees in us, we see in her, we see things that we didn't know were there before. So what does the average guy do? He gives his wife a whole piece of advice, how she should change and why it's better to be different. And that backfires. And that's why usually you find in life that the issues keep recurring in marriage. Couples don't resolve issues. Couples just rehash them. And very often, when issues come up, they'll say, you see, this is what you did that time and that time and that time. You see, this is the point I made way back when. And when people have issues, they'll very often tell you, sure, she's been doing this her whole life. She doesn't know how to do any better. And by the way, it goes the other way too. She'll say the same thing about him. So the key when we start off, the key is firstly to accept that we're in this for life. One of the reasons that issues tend to explode and to blossom and to really encompass much of life is because we approach them with the feeling, I have an alternative. If we would think, how do I make this work? Instead of the question, do I make this work? Then we'd already be 10 steps forward towards the solution. One of the worst sentences you could think, and these are sentences that will often haunt a person, at least for the beginning of marriage, is, I don't have to put up with this. That sentence, I don't have to put up with this, that's one of the most dangerous sentences in marriage. Because the answer is, yes, you do. And every guy will tell you, but I don't think anyone else is. I've had friends, I've had relationships, and the answer is, you don't know. But everyone is. In life, we have to deal with ourselves and our own faults. And when we get married, so our spouse becomes a part of us. We are one. If we are one, then we both have to deal with each other's faults. So there was a couple that they're getting a ride for Sheva Brachos. And the ride calls up and says, I'll be there in 5 minutes. And the husband starts heading for the shower. And his wife says, they're going to be here in 5 minutes. What are you doing? And he says, so they'll wait a minute. So now she automatically thinks, but they're doing you a favor. How could you make them wait? And he tells her, yeah, but I can't show up to the Sheva Brachos without a shower. And she thinks, you should have thought of that earlier. And he thinks, well, you don't have to be my mother. And you understand that here you have a small story, very classical. She looks at it and says, that's not right. And he looks at it and says, what's it your business? They'll wait a minute, it's not a big deal. I would wait for them. So they'll wait. We look at one another, and the first mistake we can make is the thought, that's not right. You see, when we look at one another, if we're gauging one another based on a metric system, is this right? Is it wrong? So then we're going to see a lot of things that are wrong. The question is that my business? Am I here to measure the other person? Am I here to tell the other person where they're wrong? Or am I here to make the marriage work? Together, we will make it work. If I'm going to come and say, you know, this should be done differently and that should be done differently, you'll find many examples throughout your day, every day, and it doesn't matter who you'll marry. And you know what? Your spouse will find them too. But when we can accept the other person, and we can look at what their traits are and say, fine, this is a wonderful person, and there are certain things that, whatever, we're going to see how we're going to manage. But it's not, will we make it work? It's, how will it work? We've already accomplished most of the struggle of the first years. Just that thought. This is it. Now let's see how. Then we have to remind ourselves of this Mishnah. The Mishnah begins with one of the harshest traits, being brazen. You guys know what it means to be brazen. You ask your wife, why'd you get that detergent? And she says, who asked you? Wait a second, why did I need that answer? Right? Now you're getting a brazen answer. You didn't mean to ask an offensive question, but when a person has the trait of brazenness, so then it's very hard to deal with them. Now it could go both ways, because you're guys, so I'm telling you the girl, but you understand, it could go the other way too, right? She asks you a question, you answer that way. Comes the Mishnah and tells you it's a question of channeling. Yehuda ben Tema omer hevei az kananer. Yeah, you should be brazen. You know where? To do the will of your Father in heaven. That same attribute, when channeled correctly, well, that's a tremendous strength. So if I can look at the other party and say, it's a wonderful person with excellent traits, there are traits that have to be channeled. So I also have traits that have to be channeled. So, okay. So we're all a work in progress. Yehuda ben Tema took traits which can be problematic. If you're quick to decide, a person can destroy their whole finances. They invest their pension plan. Sure, they heard this stock is doing great. And boom, that's where most people lose money, when they go by the hot tip they just heard. Everyone's talking about the stock that's going up, right? By the time everyone's talking about it, you've missed the boat. So being swift, that's not always a good thing. Comes Yehuda ben Tema and says, if it's lasot ritzon avicha shebashamayim, if it's to do the will of your Father in heaven. There's a beautiful book, which is based on a true story about a kid who was a troublemaker. This is before the Holocaust. And he was always the wise aleck. And he could lie through his teeth, looking at people straight in the eye, and lie to them. And one day his Rebbe calls him in and says to him, I want you to know that you have the attributes it takes to be a leader. You have attributes that will ultimately come and serve you in good stead. You'll find the opportunities to channel those attributes on behalf of the Jewish people. And a few years later, the Holocaust broke out, and he was able to dress up as a Nazi. He was able to look other Nazis in the eye and talk like a general. And he used all those attributes, he used them now, and he saved many people's lives. Many people in his community, he was able to save their lives because for a long period, he was able to fake being one of them. He took those same attributes, channeled them. Now his lying capabilities, his brazenness, his lack of shame, all those attributes were used to save lives. So when we look at a person, we have to save judgment. We have to be able to say, there's room to channel that. Channeled correctly, it will succeed. So a woman called up, true story, she says, my husband can't get out of bed till 12, and he's the best con artist in the world. And I never know when he's telling the truth and when he's lying. And I'm not sure how to make it work, because he can't keep a job, because he knows how to convince everyone of everything and why he was always right, but that's not how you lead life. You got to be straight. So my first question was, how many children do you guys have? Could he still learn to be a lawyer? But they were already well on in life. It wasn't possible for him to learn to be a lawyer. So I met with him and I asked him, would you be willing to work on one trait? Just not lying. Everything else, convincing people, everything else, you can use. And I spoke to a friend of mine who was in the real estate business, and I asked him if he's willing to give the guy a chance. Now, what's good about the real estate business? That you set your hours. He doesn't have to show up to an office at 7 o'clock in the morning or at 9 o'clock in the morning. So he's still getting out of bed at 12 o'clock. But he's setting up his meetings after 12. He's going and he's working on being an honest person. So he could work on one trait and take all his other traits, his excellent capacity to convince people and his excellent capacity to say things with great fervor as though his life dependent on it. And he's using it now to help people find the house of their dreams. Now, obviously, his boss is aware that he has to keep an eye, that this guy's really honest, that he's legitimate. And he's aware that his job depends on it. But here he had a series of traits that were problematic. If you could take one and work on it, all the rest he was able to channel in a right direction. So that's true in much of life. There was a couple where the wife said, "The only thing I know how to do well is sleep." So her husband was very smart, and he got her involved in one of these universities where they pay you to sleep, and they channel your brain and how you dream, and he got her a job at sleeping. So she's not making a mint, but at least she's channeling that in the right direction. Very often you think, what can come of this? Wait, if we can view it positively, Yehuda ben Tema came and taught us that every trait, every attribute just has to be channeled. Na'asot ritzon avicha shebashamayim, to do the will of your Father in heaven. Now, Rav Yosef Karo left out the trait of brazenness, right? We said that. That in the Shulchan Aruch, he doesn't say the trait of be brazen, because that's a problematic trait. And that maybe gives us an insight as to one of the biggest challenges within any relationship. The Talmud says that any person that gets upset takes a step back in life. Moshe Rabbeinu got upset, he lost his prophecy, he forgot halachot. Now when Moshe gets upset, he's getting upset at something that's important. He's getting upset because he's seeing the men he sent out to war, a war over a certain sin. It seems to him that they're repeating the error. We're going to war, 24,000 people died, and they're doing the same thing all over again. So it's understandable that he got upset. And yet, a minute later, a halachic question arises. How do we kosher the vessels? And Moshe can't answer. Our sages say any person, when they get upset, they lose. One of the biggest mistakes a person can make is to act out of anger. If you're upset, the best thing you can do is take a step away from the situation. Very often we're tempted to react right away. And almost always, I would say always, a person has that capacity to say, I won't do anything right now. As upset as I am, I'm not going to do anything. I'll deal later. The biggest mistakes can be made when a person's upset. The Mishnah tells us, as panim legeinom, someone who's brazen ends up in perdition. And that's why Rav Yosef Karo left out this Mishnah. He didn't include the first part, be brazen like a leopard. So the commentaries all say, you show up to shul on time, and your friends start making fun of you. Ooh, you're getting pious on us. Why are you suddenly getting here on time? That's when you have to be brazen. Brazenness is when you're being put on the defensive for doing something that's right. That's the time that Yehuda ben Tema meant, and that's the time the Torah meant that a person has to have the capacity to be brazen. Because sometimes we're challenged for doing what's right. And then it's tempting to give in. Sometimes you don't feel like putting up the fight. That's when Yehuda ben Tema says, be brazen. If we take a step back, within married life, this comes up in different scenarios. The first thing we have to know is why the Beis Yosef omitted it. Almost always a harsh reaction is a mistake. When we were first engaged, my wife and I, so there was a rabbi who I learned a lot from. And he's very humble. Whenever he calls, he introduces himself by his first name. So his name is Avraham, and he calls himself Avi. So one day I get a text message from my wife, and it says, Avi called, he's looking for you. And I'm shocked. Like, here's a person who finishes Shas more than once a year, and she knows I learned so much from him, and she's calling him Avi. We weren't getting married. I didn't know what I'm supposed to say. So I didn't say anything. But I walked around for hours, with this, like, wondering why. Why would she do that? And then when we finally spoke, so somewhere along the line, I said to her, when did Avi call? So she says to me, Avi didn't call. Who's Avi? I said, oh, Rabbi so-and-so. She said, since when do you call him Avi? I said, well, I was just trying to understand your text message. So she said, oh, no, I meant my father, Avi. Avi in Hebrew also means my father. My father called and he was looking for you. Now imagine if I would have reacted differently, right? Very often in life, there are misunderstandings. And even when we're confident that we really understand what's going on, we lose when we react in a brazen manner. It's almost never happens that that's the right reaction. Okay, over here we can really go on a small tangent, which is an important tangent. When would be the right time to react harshly? So I'll tell you one time that if you react harshly, your wife in the long run will really appreciate it. There are communities that don't give any classes to the chatan before he gets married. The groom doesn't get a class. He gets like a one-shot deal, two classes. And they tell him a few very important tips. Figure if you only got two classes with the guy, you better get in some really important stuff. So one of the messages they tell him, which is of prime importance, is there's one word that doesn't show up in the house. There's one word you should never say, and that is divorce. Divorce is like a gun. You know, in the United States, they have a rule. You don't pull out a gun till you're ready to use it. Why is that? Because very often, people, an armed robber would enter the house, someone would draw a gun and say, stay away. And the robber realizes they didn't, what do they call that, to cock the gun? They didn't cock the gun. It's not yet ready to shoot. He notices that the safety clip is on. He notices it's not even facing in the right direction. And more often than not, the person who was threatened with the gun finds a way to get the gun away from the victim, and then they've got the upper hand, to put it mildly. So the rule in the United States is you don't threaten with a gun. When you're ready to draw the gun, that's because you're ready to shoot. You don't pull it out as a threat. A gun is not something to threaten with, it's something to shoot with. That's the rule, and it was learned after many morbid experiences. The same is true with divorce. Divorce isn't a word to threaten with. It's not a part of the discussion. Many times, when one of the spouses will say the word, the other one goes into panic mode. I've seen couples who were already grandparents, where one of them said it, half jokingly, but really insinuatingly to the other one. And the other one was so hurt that for years they couldn't get over it, until finally they did have to divorce. The first one didn't mean it, and I've seen this in both sides. I've seen couples where the wife said it, and they ended up divorced because she said it. And years later, she would look back and say, I started this process because I made that a part of our lingo, a part of our conversation. I've seen couples where the husband said it, and that ultimately led to divorce. And again, years of a happy marriage were not enough to protect against this time bomb, because that word is basically telling the other party the harshest sentence. I could live my life without you. And that's the hardest thing for a person to hear. So the one of the messages they tell a person is, you never use that word in the house. And I would add to that, that sometimes people make jokes which insinuate divorce. Sometimes people make jokes about divorce. And that shouldn't be in the house. You never know when you're going to say something that's slightly misunderstood. And if you hear your spouse saying something as a joke, something about divorce, that's the one time I recommend you react, at least you feign being brazen, you react and say, do me a favor. I beg of you, don't ever say something like that. When you react harshly, what you're really telling your spouse is, the last thing in the world I want to hear, the last thing in the world I want to think about, I don't even want to joke about this idea of divorce. So, going back to our Mishnah, Yehuda v'Tei Matoras, Heve'az kanamer, be brazen like a leopard. we quoted the tour who begins his halachos with this, the idea of channeling our traits all in the service of Hashem. We quoted the Shulchan Aruch who omits it because almost always brazenness backfires and is misapplied. Kal kanesher, swift as an eagle. Again, in the service of Hashem. Ratz katzvi, run like a deer. Gibor kari, brave like a lion. Nasot ritzon avicha shebashamayim, to do the will of your Father in heaven. One of the speeches at our Sheva Brachos, a relative got up to speak, and they said the following story. He said that he had spoken to me once when he had discussed with me what was I looking for in a wife. And I had told him the following story. And this was news to me because I didn't remember this conversation. But this was what he quoted at the Sheva Brachos. He said that I was once driving down the highway and I saw a car with a flat tire on the side. And an Orthodox woman trying with a jack to undo the tire, and she's really having a hard time at it. And by the time I understood what was going on, I was already way past her. This is down the highway. So I pull off the next exit. I go back. I come back on the highway. This is all he's quoting me, right? I start driving down. This time I'm on the right lane, waiting till I see this woman again. And as I see the car up ahead, I pull off on the side, and I come out, and I say, you know, can I give you a hint? And she says, sure, I can't do anything here. So, okay, I get the jack out of the back of the car, I jack up the car, I undo the tire, I put on the donut, I put the flat tire in the back, I'm putting in the gear in the back, and then I'm about to close the trunk, and she says, wait! I said, what happened? She says, you can't slam the trunk. I said, why? And she said, because my husband's sleeping in the back seat. So, this relative said that when I discussed with him what I was looking for, I said, I want a wife like that. So that's what he was telling about me at the Sheva Brachos. So that was an interesting what?
Is the Rabbitson like that?
We don't get personal here. That's not fair. So, at any rate, then he turned to me and said, but I want to remind you one part of the wedding. When they opened the mechitzas and they brought your kala to sit next to you, so you danced towards the mechitzas. And that shouldn't stop. You got to keep dancing towards one another. The Mishnah says, Ratz katzvi. You know, many times in the beginning, we're excited. You go out to a date, you're filled with life. Everything's great. You walk in the door, 3 years down the road, 6 years down the road, 10 years down the road, it's the end of the day. Come on. Who has strength to smile? I saw the most phenomenal thing last week. I was at the supermarket, bagging my items. Behind me was a woman. I didn't know who she was. A man walks into the supermarket. This is this person's second marriage. His wife was killed in a car accident, and he married a woman whose husband was murdered in Hebron. And he walks through the door, white hair. He's headed into the supermarket, and suddenly the woman behind me calls out to him, and then I understood she was his wife. She had done the shop instead of him. He turns around. He's surprised to see her at the supermarket. Now, this is both of their second marriages. Each one has already built a family beforehand. And he turned around, and he sees her, and I saw the biggest smile spread across his face. And I said to myself, wow, they're already married a decade. It's their second marriage. And he turns around and you saw the smile. He smiled, she smiled. But how many people do you see that way? When do you ever see a couple, any couple, it's their first marriage and they're married 3 years or 5 years. They save their krechts. You guys know what krechts is? Krechts is their whining, their complaining, their expression of, that's what they say for one another. The Mishnah tells us our relationship with Hashem. And the Mishnah is telling us important points about our relationship with Hashem. We get up to do a mitzvah, we should do it swiftly. We're doing things of importance, we should do them quickly. Our relationship with Hashem is often compared to our relationship with our wives, right? The whole Song of Songs. So I'm just borrowing that idea What happens when your wife asks you to do a diaper? How quickly do you do it? What happens when she asks you, do you have strength to do the dishes Friday night? Friday night. Yeah, guys, remember this. Friday night, everyone's tired. If you love her, then Friday night is a good time to show her that. I believe it's a very tragic thing that people bring newspapers into the house on Friday. You want to read the paper, do it on Sunday. Do it on your time. Why are you doing it on her time? You finally have family time together, so why shouldn't you be there helping do the dishes? So Friday night, she, I don't know if she has to ask you, but if she does ask you to do the dishes, Ratz Katzvi, the Mishnah tells us, to run like a deer. And very often it's those times that define our relationship for us. When we're both tired, when no one feels like getting up and clearing the table, doing the dishes, putting the food back in the fridge, etc. So this Mishnah that tells us how to channel our strengths is telling us how to do it towards our Father in Heaven. And as our class is focused on the Jewish home, so we can think about how to channel it between us and our spouse, between us and our fellow man. And we should remember the conclusion of the Mishnah, that it's important to be a humble person. The Mishnah says a brazen person doesn't usually succeed. It's a humility that succeeds. Humility means I don't always have to fight for the point. You guys remember we said marriage is not a metric system? It's not only about what's right and wrong. If it's about what's right and wrong, then we're all wrong very often during the day. So it's about how we're going to make it work. And that's where humility kicks in. I remember as a child, there was a story they told us, and they said it to us every year over and over again. And unfortunately, I don't remember the names involved. But it was a rabbi from the previous century who was up late learning, and he got up early to daven Vasikin, and then he went back to take a nap. And when he finally woke up from the nap, so he hadn't slept that much, and his father walks into the room and starts scolding him for sleeping late. And he's silent and he listens. And then his father leaves the room, and his brother says, Dad thought you didn't daven yet this morning. You were up late learning, and you got up early, and you davened, and you just took a nap. Now, why didn't you say something? So he said to his younger brother, he said, look, maybe I didn't deserve it this time, but there's a lot to learn when Dad scolds us. So I'll think about it next time. I'll learn from it. I don't have to react to it. So it wasn't relevant this time. Okay? There's what to think about. So this was a story they used to tell us, I'm telling you, as kids, we heard it almost every year. But there's food for thought in that. Very often in marriage, we're fighting for the truth. Why is that so important? Maybe we can accept it, even if it's not. So they weren't 100% on the mark this time. Okay. Didn't I ask you to buy two cottage cheeses? And you feel like, wait a second, you asked for one, we discussed it, and I bought one, and now you're going to tell me you asked for two? That's not fair. I did what you asked me for. Now, it seems little. It seems so petty. But when you're there, you feel like, wait a second, why are you telling me that? That's not fair. And if I bought the whole shop, which was what you asked me for, and I spent the last 3 hours online, and I schlepped it all up the steps, okay, so I forgot one cottage cheese. So that goes back to what we've been discussing and we'll continue discussing, the idea that rebuke always hits us in the gut. We always take it personally. It doesn't matter what's being said. To us, it's personal. But the flip side of it is, Boshet panim legan eden. Yehuda ben Tema says, a person who can be humble will all ultimately reach the Garden of Eden, and that's true in marriage too. So, Laila Tov.